Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast, presented by the FTN Network, breaking down NFL action with the info you need to crush your fantasy leagues.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast. Y'all know who it is. It's your boy Ray G, joined by my man, as always, Josh Larkey. It is NFL Draft Week. There's nothing going on. No big deal. Just quarterbacks and running backs and wide receivers that nobody thinks are any good. So Josh and I are going to take some time today and talk through these players. We don't know each other's ranks. We have no clue who has what ranked where. Josh, how you doing this evening? And are you excited for Thursday, Friday, and Saturday?
Ray, I'm doing very well. I mean, we talked right before we started recording. It's a busy week. However, this is an exciting week. I like to call it the Super Bowl of the off season. I don't know if I'm being too dramatic or not dramatic enough, but the NFL draft starts on Thursday. Day two's on Friday. Day three is on Saturday. It's going to be a ton of fun. And I think one thing that I'm most excited about, just as a fan of chaos, a fan of football, is that compared to recent years, not even just with the fantasy relevant players, but the draft board in general, there is so little consensus right now. Where starting at pick one this year, there's multiple players that could get drafted. Whereas if people remember last year, it was like Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and then the draft kind of began and everyone sort of anticipated the quarterback run. This draft, I don't know. Quarterbacks could probably won't, but I mean, they could feasibly start at pick two. I think they could also feasibly start in the teens. And I think that's actually pretty crazy to have that type of range of outcomes. So it's going to be exciting. We can talk through this draft and kind of like, as we're picking, what team we think they're probably going to. And maybe we can also add like post-draft, here's like the highest they might rise or fall realistically based on a potential landing spot.
I mean, you're putting a lot of pressure on me, Josh. This is a hard-ass exercise you're trying to. I just want to let you know that I didn't tell you pre-show. But this is very... You're asking me to not only mock these guys, but then pick the team they're going to land to, talk about how they're going to be impactful or non-impact. This is terrible. I'm just gonna tell you, this is terrible. And we'll see how well I follow instructions through this exercise. But I'm interested to see who you have as, you know, your top wide receivers and where you have these running backs ranked. So I'm excited to dive into this, man.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I mean, I have actually never done a live mock on air before. So I think that's why these expectations are a little bit out there. So we'll see. Maybe I'm going to get exposed. And it turns out that I'm not ready for this level of the game. But I've done couple dynasty drafts myself. I've done a lot of mocks and I'm excited for this. I feel like there's gonna be some players we agree on, a few we disagree on, and there might be some spicy picks. So we're gonna be doing a super flex 2-round rookie mock. We can just assume PPR, half PPR. I don't really think it matters. I don't know about you. I don't really adjust my ranks for PPR and half PPR. I think it's just, if you're really trying to factor in like which guy is gonna get the extra two receptions, then you don't understand just how unpredictable this NFL game is.
Yeah, I'm not adjusting anything for half point and full PPR. The only wholesale adjustments, you know, and in this year's class, it really doesn't matter. But in, you know, tight end premium above like, you know, 1.5 and higher tight end premium, you know, I think you have to elevate, you know, bump up some of those elite tight ends. And fortunately or unfortunately, depending on where your tight end situation is, we don't have any of those guys in 2022. So we don't have to worry about that problem with a tight end premium. I think it's one guy, and that one guy, Larkey, I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe tight end 12 upside, maybe, in my opinion. We'll see how that plays out, though.
Yeah, I agree with that. And before we dive in, just to let everyone know out there, we've got the NFL draft live stream for FTN coming up. That'll be day one and day two, so Thursday and Friday night. That'll be hosted by myself along with Chris Meany. We're going to have the whole stable of FTN guests coming aboard, including the very famous Jeff Ratcliffe and Jake Seeley. We'll get those guys. We'll get their takes. We're going to have a lot of other people hopping on. So pretty much all your favorite FTN personalities will be there. And I think it's going to be a good time. Like we said before, it's going to be an unpredictable draft. So I think it's going to be really exciting. A lot of us thinking on our feet. I'll be doing some live projection updates as well during the draft, just so we can kind of have an idea of what these offenses look like once the receivers, potentially if there's a first round running back, what the quarterbacks, what these offenses will look like with these new pieces added to it. I'm pretty excited about it. And if you're listening to this and you love baseball, you're playing baseball for fantasy, DFS, or you hate fantasy football and you're only listening to this to hear about the MLB promos and to hear about the content, well, Vlad and the team, they've been crushing it. So make sure that you have signed up for FTN Daily, FTN Bets. We've got all that good stuff. FTN Fantasy, promo code LARKY, LARKY, will get you 20% off any package for perpetuity at this point. So make sure you get in now, promo code LARKY. And then our sister podcast, the FTN Datacast with Tyler and Adam. I guessed it on that one last week. The guys are spitting out great content. Ray, the producers are in my ear. They said good job. And they said it's time to kick off this rookie mock. So I think we can draw straws. And I think you can have the 101 for this one. Unless you really don't want it.
You know what? Since I've done this show a couple of times, Larky, and you're the new kid on the block, and this is your first time doing an on-air live mock, I am going to turn the torch over to you and give you the easiest decision that one can make in Superflex, because it's kind of... Here's the thing, Larky. I don't think either of us should have the one pick. I think the draft should start at two in Superflex drafts, because we know who the 101 is, right?
So I think we're talking Breece Hall, but you said Superflex, so maybe you're thinking Malik Willis, potentially?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Breece Hall, baby.
All right, there we go.
So who made the pick? Was it me or you? Did I make the pick? Did you make the pick?
Well, this can be the group pick. So
all right, group pick.
All right,
group
Breece Hall. I don't know if you have too much to add to this, but he looks like one of the rare... We actually talked about how the bell cow running back is dying. For those that are the big stats people, only two running backs had 300 or more carries last year, Jonathan Taylor, Najee Harris. And if I remember correctly, that number used to be in the teens about 10 to 15 years ago in terms of how many running backs a year would hit that. So Breece Hall looks like the last of a dying breed. He's an adequate pass catcher. He's really fast. He's going to get the draft capital. And I think that, and it seems to me like in a year like 2022 where there's a lot of good players but not many great players, I think he kind of stands out in this class.
Yeah, I mean, yes, he does. And he tested like a freak, was ultra productive at Iowa State. I mean, at this point, just continuing to talk, I mean, he's the 101. I don't care if it's super flex, flex super, flex Alexander, it doesn't matter. Breece Hall is 101, single quarterback, super flex, half point, full point, tight end premium, Breece Hall, Breece Hall, Breece Hall. He's the number one running back, can catch the ball out of the backfield, do damage between the tackles. I don't think he's a generational type prospect. I don't. I don't think he's Jonathan Taylor. I don't think he's any of that. I think he's a really, really good running back, and in a class where the running back position is a little bit weak, he just stands head and shoulders above all the other guys.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's a combo of him in this class, what we've seen at the running back position, where it seems like these running backs, they get 2 to 3 years, and then they slowly start to fizzle out. So I think just with how scarce that position is in this draft, if you have the premium draft capital at 101, I think unless you get a really good offer, you just take Breece Hall in your rookie draft and just high-five yourself that you have, I think, kind of out of the gate, assuming a decent enough landing spot, I think you have a borderline top five dynasty running back. And that could even be like top three if he goes to like Buffalo or another Holy Grail type landing spot.
Do you think that, and just quickly, because I think we can spend all night talking about this, Larky, do you think that's because he's so good, or the top of the dynasty RB landscape is just so, I don't want to say uncertain, but the guys that we know that are going to be productive in year one or this upcoming football season, they're just older, right? And it's a byproduct of, you know, Derrick Henry is older. Nobody really wants Dalvin Cook anymore. Christian McCaffrey, people are kind of shaky on him. Saquon Barkley is reaching that age. You're not taking Nick Chubb that, like, Austin Eckler. Like, these guys are, I do not believe that even in the best of landing spots, put Breece Hall in Buffalo, I don't believe he's going to outproduce Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook, Christian McCaffrey, a healthy Saquon Barkley, Austin Eckler. I don't envision that happening in year one, but if I'm in a dynasty startup draft, I'm not taking any of those guys, 26, 27, 28, 29 years old, over Breece Hall. So my question is he that high because he's that good, or is it, all right, we're in this weird space where you can't justify taking Austin Eckler or Derrick Henry, you know, in the first or second round of a dynasty startup because of their age, and you just kind of have to go with the younger guy, and you've got Javonta up there, you know, DeAndre Swift to a degree, but how much longer? So that's just my question to you. Is it because Breece is this good, or the other running backs are just old and we just don't want him anymore?
I think it's kind of a combination. He is a very good running back prospect. He's not generational like the Saquon, like the Jonathan Taylor. But I think it's that combined with, like what you said, it's just there's not a lot of youth up top. And I think outside of the Buffalo landing spot, I don't think Breece Hall is a mid to high end RB1 for redraft. Kind of like what you said, like there's going to be a lot of guys that you put above him. I think he really has to go basically to Buffalo in order for me to consider him versus Henry, him versus Dalvin Cook, all those types of comparisons. But for Dynasty, I really think right now it's kind of this weird big four where it's Jonathan Taylor, Najee Harris, Javonte Williams, DeAndre Swift. And then after that, there's guys that are older. You have, like, I don't know, it's like some weird combination. I actually feel like you can kind of interchange them depending on how you like to play and what you think, but it's like McCaffrey, Eckler, Mixon, Dalvin Cook, Kamara. Yeah. Chubb, Saquon, Antonio Gibson, Derrick yep. Henry, like David yep. Montgomery, ETN. I don't know. Like when I look at those names, you could tell me that you had a guy like five spots ahead of that, five spots behind that. Like you could just really interchange them, and I don't think anyone would be hot taking all that much just because of if you're thinking about this stuff in like a 2-year window or 3-year window or I don't know. I don't think any of these guys really are going to be relevant 2-3 years from now.
Yeah, they're not. And what's going to be interesting is when we have this conversation next year, because the running backs in 2023 are legit. They are very, very, very good prospects. And I'm going to be interested to see where they go in comparison to a Hall. You know, we talk about Buffalo. I don't think they're taking him, man. If they want Breece Hall, they have to take him at 25. And I just, everything that I'm reading, everything, I don't think they're going to do that, man. They seem to be making competent moves, and I don't care how good you think Breece Hall is, taking a running back in round one of the NFL draft is not smart. It's just not. And if you look at Buffalo, they didn't lose in the playoffs because they didn't have a running back. Like, say what you want about Devin Singletary, that wasn't the reason why they lost, right? It was secondary help. It was defense. Those were the reasons why they weren't able to advance, not because they didn't have this bell cow running back. And I even beg the question, even if they do draft a guy, whether it's Breece, Kenneth Walker, I don't care who it is, when they get to the 3-yard line, Josh Allen's running the ball in at the goal line. Like I don't see them deviating from what makes Josh Allen, you know, almost, you know, a 2-time MVP in the NFL and saying, you're not going to run anymore, Josh Allen. You're not going to be our primary ball carrier on the goal line. In even their offseason move, Larky, they tried to bring in J.D. McKissic. And I'm trying to read the tea leaves here. What that told me sitting back, is they're fine with Singletary. Can they use an upgrade? Sure. But let's find a pass-catching back. Let's find somebody that can come on third downs and be that primary pass catcher. If they want a guy to just handle early down work, why spend a first-round pick on that? Why not get a Zamir White in the third or, you know, a Tyler Allgeier or somebody else later on? I don't know. Everybody wants that to happen for fantasy. I don't think it's going to happen, man. I do not think they're going to take Breece Hall at 25. If they do, I'd be happy, right? Like, I'd be happy if that happened, but I don't think it's going down like that, man.
So I agree with something you said, and I disagree with another piece. I agree. I don't think Buffalo will ultimately do it. I've seen a lot of mocks that have that. That's my fantasy wish list. But I think one thing to consider for people wondering, like, why wouldn't Buffalo just do it? That's a hole. Is one of the big value adds of the first round pick is that you get that fifth year option and it's very affordable for almost every position except running back. I don't remember what it is. What is it like? It's like $10 million or $11 million, something like that for the fifth year option for running back. And that's actually pretty crazy. Whereas if you're getting a fifth year option on other positions and it's $10, $11, $12 million, that looks really, really good. So I think that's one issue with the first round running back is that you're basically getting rid of kind of that gift of the fifth year option for your first round pick. However, I think Josh Allen and the Bills ultimately, I think they do want him to run less at the goal line. And the way that I kind of think about it is I think Josh Allen is more effective than any goal line back. Like, I'm not going to deny that. I think that in terms of like conversion percentage, he's getting the ball in more often than a running back. But I think that marginal benefit of like, oh, Josh Allen's going to get the ball, he's going to punch the ball in a little more often. I think weighing that with the injury risk of him kind of slamming himself against all the 300 pounders on the D-line, I think that's something that will weigh on them year after year, especially now that he's getting so much more expensive and that they really have kind of opened up this contention window. They just extended Diggs. It seems to me like if something were to happen to Allen these next two, three seasons, it'd be pretty catastrophic. So I think they're going to start limiting him at the goal line. Not necessarily what I want for fantasy year to year, but I do think it's going to happen at some point. I think, like we said, they're a smart organization. I think they're going to realize the calculus doesn't quite make sense to give him these hits. But maybe I'm just thinking about it too analytically.
It's kind of staggering to look at it, right? You look at just his rush attempts over the first 4 years of his career, 89 attempts, 109, 102, and last year 122, 31 career rushing touchdowns, over 2,300 yards. I don't know, man. The trend is continue to run this 6'5", 240-pound monster. And here's my thing, and this is the football part of me coming out. If you take away from a player what makes said player special, then that player's no longer, like, he's not going to just stand back there, survey the defense, you know, 17 games for the season and be Aaron Rodgers. That's not what makes Josh Allen special. What makes him special and what makes him such a headache for opposing defensive coordinators is his rushing ability. So while they may talk that shit about wanting to dial it back, when they're in game and they need a play, Josh Allen is going to do what Josh Allen has done since probably is the days that he played high school football, and that's run the damn ball. And I do think, you know, this would be one that we will revisit, Larky, but I think he's going to continue to run that ball as often as he can handle because he hasn't been hurt. I mean, he's missed one game in his career. He hasn't started one game in his career. 60 games started of 61 available for him to play. I mean, we'll see, man. I don't think that that's what they need. And if I were drafting for Buffalo, there's no way in hell I'd spend a first-round pick on a running back. But we've spent 25 minutes talking about the 101 in this mock.
I'm going to give you a half-point victory for the Josh Allen speech, and I'm going to make the 102. And at the 102, I'm going to take Malik Willis. And I think that's a fairly consensus pick. Maybe that changes based on draft capital and just kind of like what team he lands on. But I think the case for Malik Willis is really simple. And I think it kind of starts, for me at least, I'm a simple guy. It starts and ends with Trey Lance. Trey Lance, big arm, fast, mobile quarterback. Malik Willis, big arm, fast, mobile quarterback. Trey Lance had the absolute nightmare rookie season where he was overshadowed by very, very league average Jimmy Garoppolo. And even when he was playing at not 100%, they still opted for him over Trey Lance when it mattered in the playoffs. So despite all this and Trey Lance having this absolutely horrific rookie season, Trey Lance's dynasty value barely changed. And I think that's what's nice about Malik Willis is I think that you're kind of insulated where I think the upside is obvious. We've seen Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, the guys that are running the ball 8, 9, 10, 11 times a game, they don't even have to have the best individual passing stats. I mean, Jalen Hurts was not a great passing quarterback last year. He was still the QB6 per game. despite having below average offensive weapons, where it's pretty much just Smith and Goddard, and that Quez Watkins and Jalen Reagor are somehow getting full-time snaps. This is a train wreck scenario when you're thinking about it for a quarterback who also doesn't have the best arm talent, and he still produced in fantasy. So for me, it just seems like Malik Willis, it's simple. No matter what he does as a rookie, the value's insulated. If I don't like what I see as a rookie, just like if you watched Lance and go, I didn't like Trey Lance as a rookie. Great. You can trade him for pretty much exactly what you acquired him for. So I think it's pretty simple. Wherever he goes, the guy's going to run 10 times a game, and he's got the big arm. And I think outside of some kind of like season-ending ACL tear in game one, the value is going to stay pretty stagnant, if not go up.
Okay, I like it. I'm not going to argue it. I mean, that's the pick, 102. Malik Willis is not my top-ranked quarterback in this class, but I'm not going to argue it. The only thing that would make me change that is if my 103, I saw a mock where Pittsburgh Steelers traded up to take Matt Corral at 12. And if Matt Corral is a top 15 pick, if he lands in a spot like Pittsburgh, New Orleans, a place like that, I think he would be my 103 in Superflex. I would take him over the receivers. I would take him over Kenneth Walker and or Isaiah Spiller, who wouldn't be taken that high anyway. But I would take Matt Corral at 103. So in this Superflex mock, I am going to pigeonhole Matt Corral as a top 20 pick in the NFL draft. And with the same sort of premise that you talked about, the insulation at quarterback, Larky, I saw this was year 4 or 5 of Sam Darnold, and we knew that he was god awful. I saw people trading first round picks in 2023 for Sam Darnold to start the season. Those are legitimate trades that you can find on various sites, trade finders, where people were trading first round picks for Sam Darnold. I'm old enough to remember when Jacksonville started Jake Luton for a game or two, and people were trading second-round picks for that quarterback because they needed to fill in for the week. So the quarterback position is just insulated in Superflex, even if you don't like the guys. I have completely done away with QB analysis. My QB analysis is simply this. If you're a first-round pick in the NFL draft and you've got rushing upside and the NFL takes you that high, then I'm in. And outside of that, I don't want you. If you're a second-round quarterback, a third-round quarterback, you have to have some elite skill set, some special trait like a Jalen Hurts for me to even be mildly interested in. But there's no way I'd take a second-round quarterback in the first round of a Superflex rookie draft. So right here, Matt Corral, 103.
So I've got a question for you, and this will kind of lead into the analysis for another quarterback that will get taken later on in this draft. So I haven't been watching the film on the quarterbacks, but when I just look at the stats, I see that Sam Howell had 183 rush attempts and 828 rushing yards, and that includes whatever his sack yardage is. So I go, wow, that 828, that's a larger number than the 5 and 600 that Matt Corral had the past 2 years. Sam Howell also had the 38 touchdown, 7 interception rookie season at North Carolina. So that to me looks really good. I know that his junior year was kind of a down year, but I also have heard that his supporting cast pretty much entirely left. I do know that North Carolina had two decent running backs with Javonte and Michael Carter. So I at least know that the backfield got worse from 2020 to 2021. But I see that rookie year. I see the junior year of 800 rushing yards. What is it about Sam Howell's game that you don't think will translate the way Matt Corral's does? Because looking purely statistically, I go, oh, it's clearly Sam Howell. Yet I also know, right, looking outside the vacuum, Corral's almost definitely getting much better draft capital. So what is behind that for everyone like me out there who looks and goes, these numbers do not match the actual mock draft position, your quarterback, and most other people's quarterback rankings that watch the tape?
I think it's SEC versus the ACC. I mean, I just trust that level of competition. I saw him do it, be productive in back-to-back seasons. And a lot of people have revisionist history, but halfway through the college football season, all everybody was screaming about was Matt Corral 101. And then he went up against Alabama. They got smacked. And then it was just downhill from there. I think he's a little better of a runner. Sam Howell is fine. I don't dislike Sam Howell, but I had a chance to see him up close and personal at the Senior Bowl against Malik Willis and Desmond Ridder and Carson Strong and Bailey Zappe and all the other quarterbacks from this class, Kenny Pickett. and he just looked like a guy. Like, no one thought that he looked anything special. He just looked like a guy. So while I appreciate what he did running the ball, there's a big difference between rushing for 600 yards versus LSU, Arkansas, Alabama, Ole Miss, Mississippi, and then going out there and destroying North Carolina State and Georgia Tech and teams like that in the ACC.
Fair enough. All right, so just to review, we got Breece Hall 101, Malik Willis 102, Matt Corral 103. And at the 104, I'm going to go ahead and take my wide receiver one in this class. I know some people were like, oh, you should. I know a lot of people that are like, oh, go running back at this stage because there's just not a lot of good running backs. Lock one in. But to me, I really like Garrett Wilson. I don't think he's the clear wide receiver one in this class, but I think there's a lot of good receivers that are just significantly better than the next running back options, in my opinion. So I actually made a TikTok earlier today, Jay Larkey TikToks on TikTok, about Garrett Wilson. And essentially, what I like about Garrett Wilson is that he kind of checks every single box outside of size. And I think that size is becoming a slightly less important box to check with this kind of new school receiver. And I think we kind of saw, we've seen the blueprint of what it takes to be successful at 180-ish pounds like Garrett Wilson is. And that's Deontay Johnson. That's Jalen Waddle. We just saw it with Elijah Moore giving us this tantalizing taste in those, like, I don't know, like that 5-game stretch where he and Zach Wilson just went completely. I guess it wasn't Zach Wilson. It was like a little Zach Wilson and then the other quarterback who I'm now forgetting that threw for like 400 yards, like Matt White. What was his name?
Yeah, Mike White.
Mike White. Anyway, let me get off this Jets quarterback tangent. We have seen the 180-pounders succeed. They're really shifty. They often played some special teams in college like Garrett Wilson did on the punt returns. And I just think that if you can overlook the weight concerns, which I think for the modern NFL I can, he's an elite separator. He ran a sub 4.4. He played for Ohio State. That's very good competition. He was competing with other good receivers on that team, and he always had strong market share numbers. Produced as a freshman, early declare, so he's still only 21. And I think he's just going to be a pretty instant contributor for whatever NFL offense he goes to. And I think the player comp I made based on the very limited tape watching I did and looking at the stats, he looks like more dynamic, more athletic, and younger version of Calvin Ridley as a prospect. And that sounds pretty appealing to me when I say it like that. So Garrett Wilson at the 104.
Yeah, don't hate it. Don't hate it at all. I think there's there's no clear cut one in this class like there was last year, right? Like you knew it was Ja'Marr Chase. I liked Devontae Smith a lot. And he ended up being very good, but Ja'Marr Chase ended up being great. Yeah, all-time type great. So there's no wide receiver like that in this class. So I think you can really go 3-4 different ways with the top wide receiver. So don't hate it at all, Larky. But I will take the running back here at 105, I believe, and I will go with Kenneth Walker, who I believe is the here goes a film term for you, Larky, that you've heard, and I've seen you use it, the best pure rusher in this class. I do think he's the best. Just turn around, hand him the ball. I think he's the best in the class. I know it's only one season of production at Michigan State, and his sample size of catching the ball is only 13 receptions, so absolutely none. And spare me he looked good doing it at the combine, so I think he can do it in the NFL. Get the hell out of here with that. Like, that's the environment isn't even anything like being deployed as a pass-catching weapon in the NFL. I think with the good thing about Kenneth Walker is if he can here's the thing, Larky. I don't even think it's a matter of if he can catch the ball. Isn't NFL coaching staff even going to put him in that situation to do that, right? And I don't think anybody can tell you confidently, yes, I believe that's going to happen, because he demonstrated zero of that during his 3-year collegiate career. But if he does, I think he's got a chance to be very, very good. If he does not, you're banking on him being Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry level of efficient of a runner. And that's what scares me about his ceiling is I don't think he's Derrick Henry. And he's not, well, let me say this. He's not Derrick Henry and he's not Nick Chubb. So if he can't catch the ball, the ceiling is limited with Kenneth Walker. And I think a lot of people don't want to hear that. A lot of people want to cross their fingers and their toes and their eyes to say he's going to be deployed as a receiver. But there's zero evidence of that been demonstrated in college. And I'm one to say, just because you didn't do it in college doesn't mean you can't do it in the NFL. But it's a risk, man. It's a risk with Kenneth Walker. But I'm going to take him here at 105.
Yeah, I understand that. I think Kenneth Walker is most likely going to score fewer fantasy points. And I think like that this kind of first tier of receiver. But I think with him, I think the way I think about it, there's two arguments. It's one, positional scarcity in this draft. And then I think number two is like what we talked about at the beginning, positional scarcity in dynasty. That I don't think Kenneth Walker needs to do that much to separate himself from most of the running backs in dynasty, because I don't even think he's turned 21 yet, if I remember correctly. The guy's really, really young. But I think my concern is that, like you said, he's not Derrick Henry. He's not Nick Chubb. I'm as an analytics guy, I am horrible at using my imagination. And because I haven't seen a 210-pound grinder be very, very fantasy relevant before, I'm nervous to pull that trigger. It's like the Devonta Smith conversation that we had last year. And Devonta Smith, we'll see. Like, he had a very strong rookie season. I think he is set up for future real fantasy relevance where he's a must start, helping you win some weeks. But my fear with him is like, we don't really see receivers that are quite that slightly built being fantasy relevant. So that's like with Garrett Wilson, I'm like, you know what? I've seen the Deontay. I've seen the Waddle. I've seen these 180 pounders. With Devonta Smith, I was like, I haven't really seen the 165 pounder do it. It seems like he's going to do it. With Kenneth Walker, I haven't really seen the 210-pound grinder back really do it. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of who the closest fantasy comparison would be. The one I keep coming back to is J.K. Dobbins and his role with the Ravens, where he's a touch heavier. I think he's kind of closer to 215, but it's that idea of he's not the biggest back in the world. He's probably not going to be the guy that's getting 300 carries, but he's hyper efficient on them. He's going to get some goal line work, but maybe not all of it. And he's probably not catching passes. And I just don't love J.K. Dobbins in fantasy right now. But maybe I'm also just kind of hung up on the only even moderately close comparison that I could think of hasn't been working out for me, and that I kind of just got rid of him on all my rosters this offseason. It was like, I'm just done with Dobbins. I don't want to see what's in the box. I'm over it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I feel with Walker, is that I just haven't quite seen that archetype work, but I think he does, like, he's a special player. I just don't know if those special traits are going to translate to fantasy.
Well, here's the thing too, Larky. He's not 20. He's 21 and will be 22 in October.
Oh, just kidding. I take it all back. I thought he was hyper young.
No, he's 21. He will be 22 October the 20th. Kenneth Walker the 3rd.
Oh, sell. No, I'm going to sneak a running back in the second round at some point, who I know you hate, so I'll be able to draft him. Then we can have, okay. We'll bring up the age conversation in like 15, 20 minutes. So what are we at?
All right. So 106? Is it me? Is it me? No, it's you. Yeah, 106. It's on you.
So I'm going to take the next receiver that I'm very excited about. And I think he's a close wide receiver too for me. We're just going receivers since I think that
don't take my guy. I see you highlighting my guy. You son of a. Go ahead. God damn it, Larky.
We're highlighting him. So this is my wide. You know what? I'll let you talk about him because this is also an educational.
No. I want you to talk about him because the people have heard me on this player for months. You talk about him.
All right,
because
there was another guy I view similarly to him. My wide receiver 1, 2, 3 are all pretty identical. But I highlighted Drake London. Let's talk about Drake London. I'm not going to do him enough justice because he is not my wide receiver one, but I think there is a lot to like about Drake London. So the comp that I've given him is he looks like the better version in some ways of Michael Pittman. And Michael Pittman's been really good in fantasy. The guy's about, he's like 6'4", 215, 220. He's not necessarily a burner, but he's surprisingly good after the catch for someone of his size. And he projects like he can handle pretty heavy volume at the NFL level. We saw Michael Pittman do that this past year. Drake London, the counting stats don't really do him justice, partly because of the offense he was in, partly because of what's gone on with COVID, partly the injury. But if you just look at his per game numbers, Drake London has pretty much killed it freshman, sophomore, and junior year. And that's something that I love to see. I want to see production from an early age, and I want them to come out early. And ideally, they are a big receiver, since historically, most fantasy-relevant receivers are generally 210 to 220 pounds. Drake London fits right in there, and I like that he is also a basketball player. He has never focused purely on football outside of this year, and I think that that upside is exciting to me. The reason that I have him, I guess there's two reasons he's below Wilson for me, and maybe I'm making a big deal out of nothing, but one of them is the injury. I just don't like that the guy had a major injury in college, and that all else equal, if I know that Garrett Wilson has not had any type of injury issues and has been fully durable throughout college, that's great. And then with the other one with Drake London is the long speed. Obviously, he doesn't need to be a 4.4s or 4.5s guy to be very good in fantasy, but I wonder if that will ultimately limit the ceiling if he is actually some 4.65 to 4.7 guy. And next thing you know, you're looking at probably a lower volume Michael Thomas. And that might sound sexy to some people. To me, that sounds like a whole bunch of like 80 catches for 1,000 yards and 8 touchdowns, which is like kind of mid-range wide receiver 2 numbers. And I really want the wide receiver 1 upside. So I think Drake London has that, but because of a couple concerns, that is why I have Wilson a touch ahead of him. What am I missing? Try and sell me. Because I know that London is your number one in this class. Yeah.
Well, what I love is he had immediate impact on that team with multiple NFL wide receivers. He was on the team with Michael Pittman Jr., with Amon-Ra St. Brown, and was fed the ball as a true freshman. So you saw that production. The 2020 season, a lot of people must remember that the Pac-12 only played, I believe, 6 or 7 games during the COVID season. So the only two conferences, I believe, to play a full slate of games, and they weren't even a full slate, they were 10, was the SEC and the Big Ten. Very productive in that sophomore season as well. And then finally, as the guy, like I don't think people understand how difficult it is to be fed targets like the way that he was and to still produce. Defense is new. Drake London is the only person on USC that can beat us. And they bracketed him. They put shadow coverage over the top with safeties. They tried to run cloud coverage. They tried to run press cover 2 man, where they jam him at the line and bring a safety over the top, have the corner carry him below, and they couldn't stop him. When you're catching 16, 15, 14 passes week after week after week, it's a level of dominance that you really just don't see in those P5 conferences. What he was on pace for in a Power 5 conference is what you see small school guys like a Cooper Kupp at Eastern Washington or Eastern Oregon do. You see those type of receivers do stuff like that, not inside the Pac-12, not in the SEC, not in, like, it's just insane what he was on pace for before he got injured. I'm not as concerned about the long speed. He's fast enough, man. Like I don't care that he can't rip off, you know, 80-yard touchdown plays. And there's a big difference between in-game speed and testing speed, and that's been evidenced by GPS tracking. There are players who run faster in-game when someone's chasing them than when they get down in a 40-yard dash and run a test that just measures max velocity and acceleration. So I'm not as concerned about that. I understand it. Not as concerned about it. He's just a massive target. He's shown an ability to handle the volume. And when you have a quarterback who potentially may be a little inaccurate, as long as you put in his zip code, he's going to catch it. So I love Garrett Wilson, and I won't knock anybody for having G-Dub 1. But Drake London is my 1, and I take him before any wide receiver in this class.
So before you make your next pick, 2 quick things to add. Receiving yards per game for London, 71, then 84, then 136. So that is adjusting for actual games played, since some of the raw numbers like we talked about are not impressive, but 71 as a freshman, 84, then 136. Very impressive. And then quickly, Pac-12, USC. Does that concern you? Because we just talked about like Sam Howell, not as impressive. Yeah. He's playing at North Carolina. How do you adjust that? Drake London's in the Pac-12, whereas if we're looking at Garrett Wilson, he's at Ohio State, he's in the Big Ten, he is facing tougher competition.
So my guy, Jordan Backus, who runs the analytics at Destination Devi, actually dove into conference hit rates for wide receivers. And I do believe like the top three conferences that hit at the NFL level and by hit top 24 season, I believe are the SEC by far. And then it's the Big Ten and the Pac-12. And then if you just look at the history of Pac-12 wide receivers, they've been pretty good in the NFL. Robert Woods, Juju Smith-Schuster, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Michael Pittman Jr. And even before that, Marquise Lee had a pretty good season or two with Jacksonville before he ended up getting injured. So I will just lean on the fact that USC wide receivers have been productive in the NFL. We've seen it recently. We've got a couple thriving right now, and one may be poised for a resurgence this year in Juju. So not as concerned. It's P5, so not as elite as the Big Ten or the SEC, but definitely not playing against Mountain West competition or, you know, Atlantic Coast Conference or anything like that.
All right, the 107 is to you.
107. And I'm doing this not based on what I would like to happen, but what I think will happen. And what I think is going to happen, and I am not a big fan of this player. I don't even know if I can do it. I feel like a fraud if I make this pick, but I'm trying to give actionable advice. I think Desmond Ridder is going to go in the first round.
I knew you were going there. Yep.
I think he's going to go in the first round. And with his athleticism, I think you just have to do it. I really don't know what to say because I'm not a big fan of his game. I think he's wildly inaccurate. I think he's much more of a project than even Jalen Hurts. But if he, even if I don't like him, if he lands, and he's not going to go early, so he might be the one to go to Pittsburgh or New Orleans, like, the moment he's announced the starter, his stock skyrockets. And if you don't like a player, then that gives you an opportunity to sell. So I think for the sake of this exercise, I'm going to just assume Desmond Ridder's drafted somewhere in the middle of the first round. And I'm going to take him here at the 107 at Superflex. I can't in good faith put a wide receiver. I could try, but I got to go with Desmond Ridder, man. That's all I can say.
So what's funny is if you didn't take him there, I would have taken him at the 108. Kind of what you said. He wasn't someone that was fully on my radar a few weeks ago as someone that I'd consider at this point, but a lot of mocks the past week have had him going to the Steelers at 20. And I don't think any of us can deny that that would be a prime landing spot. It's a team that has a consistency of winning and putting out good offenses. It's well coached. It's a stable organization. There's good weapons there. Trubisky signed for a very inexpensive 2-year deal, so not too much to add. Grab the guy with 4 or 5 wheels that's being mocked in the mid-first. I'm just going to stick with the receivers, though. I'm going to save all the quarterbacks that aren't Malik Willis for you. We're going to go back, so my wide receiver 1, 2, and 3 are all incredibly similar. And this is a guy that has been shooting up draft boards who many now believe is going to be the first wide receiver taken in the NFL draft, a la a Henry Ruggs. It is the pure speedster. I believe he's more than that, though, and I'll talk about him and why I like Jameson Williams. So that might sound crazy. How at the 108 are you taking a receiver who is currently injured in Superflex? So I think with Jameson Williams, there's a couple things that I think are very interesting to me. One of them is obviously that the guy is just certified unbelievably fast. It's kind of like Jalen Waddle, where we don't get the testing numbers, but you know he's going to be really, really fast. We saw Jalen Waddle's rookie. He did just fine coming off a major injury. And Jameson Williams, I think he, in many ways we could talk about him like the Kenneth Walker of the receiving class, where Jameson Williams did absolute jack shit freshman and sophomore year. I'm looking right now, he never had more than 154 receiving yards as a freshman or as a sophomore. Transfers from Ohio State, who had, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and I think another good Devy prospect, who I can't pronounce his name, so I'll let you do that.
Jackson Smith and Jigba.
There it is. And
he's going to be your wide receiver one next year. I'm just putting it out there.
There we go. Then he transfers to Alabama, which, as many have heard, is also a very, very strong football school, and he puts up nearly 1,600 yards. The guy's an animal. He was very prolific on kick returns as well. That open field elusiveness that I liked with Garrett Wilson. And I think what's fun about Jameson Williams is that the draft capital looks like it could even be top 10 which is kind of crazy. He's just getting pushed up the draft boards as his workout videos are surfacing, and he's recovering well from the ACL tear. And I think he's a fun play in Dynasty because I think he's kind of like a quarterback with that value insulation, where it doesn't even matter what he does as a rookie, because I think everyone can kind of write it off as he's recovering from the ACL. And I think he has kind of that unique path where we've seen someone like a Jalen Reagor, Terrace Marshall torpedo their value as a rookie. I don't think that's in the cards for Jameson Williams. Like, I think like Treylon Burks, if he looks absolutely lost out there, could lose a lot of value, even if we're like, oh, I think he'll be fine going forward. Dynasty gamers will sour on him quickly. And I just don't think Jameson Williams has that in his range of outcomes and from a value perspective. So I like the insulation. I think there's pretty crazy upside where he could be like Jalen Waddle, a surprisingly high volume speedster. And that's very appealing in fantasy football. So 108, Jameson Williams.
Love it. Good pick. Love it. And you left one of my top-ranked wide receivers on the board, and I'll take Treylon Burks because I'm not as concerned. I'm just not. I do think that I'm going to really be paying attention to his landing spot, where he goes, because he will need to be used creatively. You can't just line him up and tell him to go be Justin Jefferson because it's not his game. And while the laziest of lazy comps right now is, you know, a Deebo Samuel type role, I think if he's used in a creative way like that, where you just get the playmaker of the ball in space, I think he can be very effective. So I'm still very much in on Treylon Burks. So I'm going to take him at 109.
I like it. I think what's nice is that I think we touched on it actually in episode one that we did together, where he's being mocked in the draft late first round, it's almost entirely good landing spots. I think that he really needs that. I think that if he ends up with a team that's maybe a little less creative, or where there's maybe no other receivers to shelter him as a rookie, like, I think the Falcons, it would be kind of fun in terms of thinking about those two athletic monsters with him and Pitts. But the more I think about it, the more I get worried that if he steps in somewhere where he needs to be the absolute guy from day one, that he doesn't quite have that polish yet. And I think that he can be an AJ Brown, but I think he needs to end up somewhere where he's not necessarily the guy on week one, and that he can kind of develop as a rookie. So I think he's got pretty crazy upside, maybe the most upside out of any receiver in this class because of the tools. So it's who I would have taken.
I agree. All right.
So I'm at the 110. There's a quarterback I know is going to be a day one, or not know, but most likely a day one starter. I'm going to, this is tough. You know what?
Do it. Do it. So, do it.
So there is a wide receiver that's going to go in the first round that I keep thinking I should take. And the more I think about it with this value insulation, I'm going to take the Gross quarterback, Kenny Pickett. Welcome to the team at the 110. I have almost nothing good to say about Kenny Pickett aside from the guy's going to go early to mid first round in the NFL draft. And he's probably going to start really early. He played 5 years in college. He was not good until year five when he had some good weapons, a very good offensive line. I know PFF had him graded as the best quarterback in college football this past year, but context matters. And the year five quarterback in a perfect system, taking over 3 seconds to throw for most of his throws, is not necessarily the most translatable situation for the NFL. So he's not very mobile. His arm, I actually think, I've watched a couple throws, and you can just look at his passing stats. It seems good to me. Watching on tape, it looks like he has at least NFL average arm strength, which is good. Mm-hmm. He has those tiny hands. He's going to fumble a lot. We're going to get probably Daniel Jones level fumble issues.
Oh, gosh.
Very little good things to say, except, I mean, hey, even if he is Sam Darnold, like you said, people will potentially sell the farm. The NFL even sold the farm. We saw Darnold traded for, a second round pick. They sold the farm for a certified terrible quarterback, so I'm going to go with Kenny Pickett just because I don't think any other receivers left have likely outcomes of the crazy upside. I hate to do it. Pickett, welcome to the team.
It's going to be a first-round pick, man. First-round pick, quarterback. He's going to start in the NFL for 3 years. So you've got some all you got to do is wait till training camp. There's some hype. If you don't like him, trade him. You know, I think there's – it's funny, Josh. I don't know how many dynasty leagues you play in, but I went to my longest home dynasty league. It's going on year 6 now. And we carry like 35 man rosters. And I went through that entire roster. You know how many players I have on my roster that I drafted in the startup from that dynasty league?
I'll go with one.
One. And the position is quarterback. It's Dak Prescott. Everybody else that I have on that team was either traded for or drafted. So this idea that you're drafting players for life, while true, highly unlikely that your team looks the same 2 years from now than it does today. So you just draft a player because it's the value position, and if you don't like him, trade him. You know, it's that simple. Dynasty doesn't have to be fucking hard, man. Just if you don't draft the guy that's got the value, we know that the quarterback position is a dumpster fire. Get the guy that's got first round capital. Wait till training camp highlights come out and Kenny Pickett's firing balls to DJ Moore or, you know, getting it in there to whomever, and just move on. Like, if you don't like him, move on. And that's what I always say. Like, you're not obligated to keep these guys on your roster. You don't have to. There's somebody in your league that will take that burden off your hand if you no longer want to deal with it. So, all right, I'm on the clock, and this is, what, the 111 spot. And let's go ahead and get it out of the way because I'm not going to let him fall to the second round because the NFL is not going to let him fall out of day two. And there's even buzz that he can go much higher than people expect. We talked about positional scarcity, running back scarcity, all of that stuff. I'm taking the SEC rusher out of Texas A&M, one Isaiah Spiller, who I know can catch the ball out of the backfield, can run between the tackles. I don't care that he only ran a 4.6. That's what David Montgomery ran. We've seen Arian Foster run that. We've seen plenty of running backs that don't have 4.3 wheels be productive in the NFL. Most all incredible NFL draft analysts, and I'm not talking about the guy on Twitter with 265 followers, I'm talking about credible guys, say that his patience, vision, and footwork are probably best in the class. And the last time we saw a running back with this type of patience, this type of footwork, I point people to what Le'Veon Bell was coming out of Michigan State. And no, I am not comparing Isaiah Spiller to Le'Veon Bell, but the footwork is exquisite. And in the NFL, if you can see the hole and you have good feet, you can find success. Will he be able to rip off long runs? No. But Ezekiel Elliott, I believe for the past 4 years, his longest rush was sub 40 yards. So, and he was just fine in fantasy football. And that was literally, I'm not even joking. I think he had the longest play in like his past 3 years, this past season. It was like 40 something yards. So, no, he's not going to rip off 80, 90 yarders like Derrick Henry or Chris Johnson. But when the average run in the NFL is between 4 and 6 yards, I think Isaiah Spiller will be just fine. So right here at 111, I'm taking him.
I can understand that. I would probably take him around this range as well. I think with Spiller, my worry about him, which I think is kind of why he lasts this long, considering it's a weak running back class. And at this point, like, I'm going to eat it. I thought he was going to be either a late round 3 or early round 4 pick. It looks like he will go in round 2 most likely now. I feel like this week he kind of got boosted up all the mock drafts that were coming out. But for me, the worry is that he's David Montgomery. And yeah. People might be like, oh, well, David Montgomery's, he's had some good fantasy stretches. For me, it's about value. David Montgomery has just never been valued as an upper echelon dynasty running back, no matter what he does. And that's kind of my fear with Spiller, is that I think he feels like the guy where the production's always going to outweigh the value. And maybe you're okay with that. And I feel like Kenny Pickett, my last pick, was basically the opposite. I think his value will always outweigh his production in fantasy. Spiller, I feel like the production will outweigh the value. So, yeah.
That's fair. I think David Montgomery is probably a very realistic outcome for him. And how do we view David Montgomery? He's not an upper echelon back, but you're starting him every week in fantasy. You are starting David Montgomery every week. And you just hope that you start him the week he gets you 2 touchdowns and 6 receptions, right? Like, even me, I like Isaiah Spiller. I think his tape is good, but I'm not married to him. If he doesn't go day two, then I'm out. Like, I'm out. Like, he needs to go day two and preferably round two. And if he does, then this is all I say in fantasy. It's my motto. I'm looking for players who have an opportunity to get me an opportunity to score fantasy points. And if he's a second round pick, the chances are he's going to probably get an opportunity. And we'll see. Hopefully he's not Ronald Jones and he is David Montgomery. But he's not the first running back that we've seen run a 4.6, have success in the NFL. So I think it's I think it's gone a little too far, because the day that he enters the NFL, Larky, he will be the youngest running back in the NFL at 20 years old. I believe he's a few months younger than Breece Hall. He'll be the youngest back in the NFL. He has the requisite three-down size. And what I love about him, unlike Kenneth Walker's worst-case scenario, he can catch the ball on third downs because he was proficient at that in college in the SEC. So I'll just trust that. Isaiah Spiller, 111.
I like that. Spiller 111. I'm going to close out the first round with Chris Olave. Chris Olave feels like the quintessential wide receiver 2/wide receiver 3. Kind of like Isaiah Spiller, where like you're not necessarily like stoked to jam him into your lineup, but it's like David Montgomery. Like you're not, I don't think anyone's mad that they're starting Montgomery in Dynasty. And I think Olave is kind of similar, where I think the production will probably outweigh the value. I think he's like Isaiah Spiller in that way, where I don't think he necessarily has this crazy high ceiling. He's a smaller, non-early declare who gives you nothing after the catch. But the positives, he's going to go pretty early in round one. It's looking like he's probably going to go in the teens now based on all the mock drafts I'm seeing, because there's going to be 7 and potentially 8 wide receivers that go in round one. The NFL record is 2004 with 7 wide receivers in round one. It looks like it's probably going to get tied in the draft later this week. So Olave played at Ohio State, very good competition, was productive from a fairly early age. He had a very incredible junior season and then went back to school and did not play as well. And I think that's kind of the red flag, and it shows to me potentially the lack of ceiling that with the nothing after the catch, but feels to me like someone I'm going to start every week and be perfectly happy with those 12 fantasy points a game. So yep. 112, Chris Olave.
Yep, I like it. You wanna do a quick recap of the first round for the people? Did we even track this damn thing? First round, it went Breece Hall, Malik Willis, Matt Corral, Garrett Wilson, Kenneth Walker,
Drake.
Help
London.
Me out. There you go, Drake London, and then
Desmond
where else
Ritter.
Did we go? Desmond Ritter. There we go.
Jameson Williams,
J-Mo.
Treylon Burks.
Treylon.
I took Pickett.
Pickett.
You came back with Spiller.
Spiller. Yeah.
And then Chris Olave. So that is
Chris Olave.
Bam. That is it. Yeah, there it is. That was probably the most disjointed recap. I feel like I thought I had such a good system before the show started to keep track of picks. And then as it happens, I'm like, oh, you know what? We're just looking at a shitload of bold ink.
it's all right, man. People know. People get the gist of it. Well, we're on to round two, right? We're going to round two.
Little
quicker on these ones. Let's go round two. Let's go, because it's gonna get dirty real quick. Oh boy, I don't know what to do right now. I'm just gonna take my next highest ranked wide receiver. Man, Larky, I
don't take that guy.
I've got to do it, man. Sky Moore. Give me Sky Moore at the 201. I think he's good. I think he's going to be a second-round pick. He reminds me, he's going to be like, I think he's going to be one of those receivers where he has a really good rookie year, but really didn't get the respect that he deserved from it, sort of like Terry McLaurin did as a rookie. Like, I think we saw McLaurin as a rookie, and we're like, oh, yeah, he's good, but I don't know. I don't know long-term. And then he goes back, and he's really good again in year two, and we're still kind of like, I don't know. And then you look up, and you're like, oh, shit, he's a superstar, right? Terry McLaurin with a quarterback, I think, would probably be a superstar. I think their games are kind of similar, but I really like Sky Moore. He's got the athleticism. I love his size, like that 5'10", you know, that range that he's in right there. I think he's, about 190-something pounds. It's like Odell Beckham size. Love him. I think he's going to get the draft capital. I'll take him here at 201.
Yeah, I was saying don't do it, because I think that's who I would have picked. It would have been George Pickens, but I swapped them. I'm going to go ahead and take George Pickens. The reason that I swapped them when I was originally, I'd been thinking that it's Pickens over Moore because of ceiling. Pickens looks like a prototypical X receiver potentially in the NFL. That is exciting for fantasy, since those guys are usually the high-end fantasy producers. But I'm getting more and more intel that he's not going to go round one. And that if he does go round one, it's at the very end. And teams just don't like his attitude. And yep. I feel like the more research I've done on receivers outside of just mining the data, this is an incredibly attitude-driven position. And I feel like we've heard so many people talk about this, where anytime there's like some former GM that comes on a podcast, what do they talk about with receiver? They go, well, we watched the tape. They had to be productive in college. And then the interview process is unbelievably important, because with receiver, you kind of need this psycho. You want the guy that's going to be going 100% full effort 30 to 40 times a game, knowing that 5 to 7 times a game, he might do something. And the others, yeah. He has to go absolute full effort no matter what. And I think that the attitude concerns, they're real. So if teams are very worried about it, then I'm going to be worried about it. But I think I'm swinging for upside here, and I think George Pickens does have the alpha wide receiver in his range of outcomes.
And I just want to say, let's decipher real smoke versus bullshit. And here's the thing with George Pickens. These attitude concerns and maturity issues have been surrounding him since the day he stepped on campus at Georgia. This is not new. This is not I don't know if you saw the report that an anonymous scout is worried about Matt Corral because he seems like a party kid. And I also don't know if you know that Matt Corral was actually removed from his high school because he beat up Wayne Gretzky's son. And it forced him to transfer. So now that's resurfacing, that he's a party kid and millions of dollars are going to change him. But that to me, that's bullshit. The George Pickens stuff, though, there have been issues around him since his true freshman season. So I think those are real concerns. And I'm at the point, Larky, where I like Pickens. I mean, I had him graded on my film grade as wide receiver 5 just based on the tape. But it's almost to the point now where I'd rather somebody else take that landmine. And I think, there are a couple of receivers that I'm just as comfortable with having. And Sky Moore is one of those players. And I'll take Jahan Dotson here at the 203. I'm a big fan of Dotson. And Penn State's done a great job of developing wide receivers. Allen Robinson, Chris Godwin, Mike Gesicki, I'm going to throw him in the receiver category as well. And then next year, they got a kid named Parker Washington that's coming out that's pretty damn good. I think he's going to be pretty good in the NFL. Like, you're talking about Deontay Johnson 2.0. I think that's Jahan Dotson. To be that, he came in much taller than I thought. I was scared that he was going to be 5'8", 5'9", and he's not. And his catch radius is ridiculous. He's got super long arms. One of the best catchers of the football in this class. I think he's going to be a plug-and-play wide receiver 3 for an NFL team and quickly rise his way up to a wide receiver 2 on a team. I don't ever think he'll be an alpha. I don't ever think he'll be a team's 1, but I think he can be a damn good 2 and probably, wide receiver 20-ish, maybe a little bit higher than that. And a lot of people say, well, why do you want that in fantasy? And I get it, but, I think that's what he's going to be, like, being realistic. And here's the thing, man. Got all these damn receivers mocked and round. Somebody's going to bust, man. And in my opinion, I just want to avoid the bust. Like, I want to avoid the guy that's going to become Jalen Reagor. I don't want to go down that path again, right? The complete bust. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe they don't turn into Ja'Marr Chase or Justin Jefferson. But just help me avoid the busts, the Kadarius Tonys, the Jalen Reagors. I don't think Jahan Dotson's going to be a bust. Don't think he'll be an elite receiver, but I think he's fine.
Yeah, that's kind of how I view him as well. So, yeah, I think that's who I would have picked. So I'm at the 204 now, and I've taken a lot of receivers. I actually have yet to take a running back because we group picked Breece Hall. I'm going to take a running back here. It's going to be a weird one. And this is going to be the one where I think we can discuss the age if we want. It's Rashad White. And I think that might sound crazy to some people. Maybe you think it's crazy. This is a running back who's going to go in round 3 or round 4. Probably round 4. That's a bit gross. Why he's going in round 4? You can't do that. The hit rates start to drop. But I think with Rashad White, he has some sneaky upside to be the best fantasy running back in this class. And it's because of his skill set. His skill set is catching the ball and being able to handle a decent amount of rushing volume. As a senior, super senior age-wise. He was 23 this past year at Arizona State. Also not the best competition, but he had 43 catches for 456 yards. And for those that are trying to do the math in their head, that's over 10 yards per reception. And it's because his deployment was frequently out wide, like what a Le'Veon Bell would do, like Eckler has done before. And that, to me, is very exciting, that I don't think he has a lot of paths to failure. I think he has a lot of paths to moderate fantasy relevance or elite fantasy production if a team ends up giving him the chance. And I like that type of profile where he's a super elite pass catcher who is 215 pounds and ran a sub 4.5. That sounds like a very good player to me. I get the age concerns, but what we were talking about with all these dynasty running backs, I mean, they're all going to be dust in 2 years anyway with their value. So just give me 2 years of Rashad White.
Whoa, Larky, we've got breaking news. We've got some breaking news on the pod. Apparently, here it is. Melvin Gordon re-signing with the Denver Broncos.
Well, the dynasty running back landscape just got a little bit worse. Oh, man.
Melvin Gordon is re-signing. I have been telling my patrons this for months. Everybody wanted Javonte Williams to just waltz in there and command 90% of the touches. If I'm Josh, I need you to hear me out, brother. I think this is going to change, man. Like, I don't think if I'm an NFL team, how do I get the most mileage out of my assets? And that's not to give him all the work. I think these teams are looking at Christian McCaffrey and the invest in Ezekiel Elliott and saying, I don't want to get down. I don't want one of my best players to go down that path. You know, Austin Eckler, he just surpassed 200 carries in a season for the first time in his career. I just don't think teams want to do this. New England's been doing it for years, and I said the entire time, if I'm Denver, I want Melvin Gordon back. He was very effective in that offense. We may hate it for fantasy football, but you know what? They're trying to win Super Bowls. They're trying to win games, and this is a great move for Denver to win games. We hate it, but it's a great move for Denver.
Oh, 100%. Horrible for fantasy, amazing in real life to preserve your asset in the second round trade-up running back of Javonte Williams. And I'm just going to plug the two of us because, like you said, you've been telling your patrons, Javonte Williams, excellent sell candidate. Last week on the podcast, we each brought a dynasty buy and a dynasty sell to the table. My dynasty sell was Javonte Williams basically for this reason. He's the consensus RB2 in dynasty. And I figured, if Melvin Gordon doesn't sign there, they're just going to draft someone because they don't want him to get all the touches. Turns out, Melvin Gordon's back, so they kept it simple. I don't think it's going to be the 50-50 split like last year, but I do not think it's going to be some fantasy-friendly 80-20 split like fantasy gamers want. I think it's probably going to be closer to 60-40. So I think Javonte Williams is going to be a great running back to start. Do not think league winner is going to happen as long as Melvin Gordon is there and healthy.
Yep. There it is. I'm sorry, I cut you off. You were going, but we had to. That was breaking. Very rarely do we get breaking news on the show, and we had some. So, I guess I'm up, and I'm going to take a player that I do not like, Josh. I think he is one of the most landing spot dependent running backs in this class. He graded out, I believe, as like RB13 for me in my film score, but everything that I've seen, he's going to be a second round pick. At absolute worst, he'll be the last pick in the third round, but he's not falling out of day two. I'm going James Cook, running back out of Georgia. I think his absolute ceiling is James White. But here's some dynasty strategy and psychology. His last name is Cook. His last name is Cook, man. And if he lands on a good team, Kansas City, if Buffalo says we're not going to take Breece Hall in round one, we'll take James Cook at 57 in the second. Do you know, just a question for you. Buffalo takes James Cook in the second. How high does he go in rookie drafts? I think he'd be a top 8 pick potentially in rookie drafts.
Yeah, I think if Walker and Spiller don't get great landing spots, I think he's the RB2 in a lot of rookie drafts. So I'm with you. I think
I don't want him. Yeah, you can have him. You can have him. I want no part of him, man. But he's going to have that value.
All right, we got James Cook at the 205. Ugh. This one's tough. I think I'm just, I don't know. I'll go with the quarterback. I'm going to take Sam Howell for all the reasons that I mentioned earlier on at the 206. I don't love any of these players. Sam Howell, there is a slight chance he goes in the first round, probably going very early in the second round. And I think that his production profile is actually very, very strong. The 38-7 TD-INT ratio as a true freshman. Yes, I know it's North Carolina. It's not the best competition, but that matters to me. I think that will matter to some teams that he was able to come in on day one there and kind of dominate the competition. Rushing-wise, he was never really asked to do much on the ground until junior year. And what do you know? He has over 180 carries and over 800 rushing yards. And remember, sacks count against rushing yards in college. So that is much more than 800. He probably had closer to about 180 carries for like 1,000 rushing yards. The guy can do everything, even if it's not on a great level. And that type of production profile, I just think quarterback, when there's still a chance he goes round one, probably early round two, he's going to start at some point. I think his value will rise significantly once he gets the green light to start. Sam Howell, 206.
All right, 207. I'm taking the most athletic wide receiver we've seen since Calvin Johnson, and I'm going to take the small school speedster, the guy that I saw at the Senior Bowl dominate P5 competition. I'm going to take Christian Watson. I think he's a little more of a project than people want to admit, but if he does fire with that skill set, with those intangibles, I think he can be really good. Ceiling for me, I don't know, Larky. Maybe Will Fuller type, a bigger version of Will Fuller because he is so fast. He does have a massive catch radius. I don't think he's ever going to be a one. I do not believe that's going to happen for Christian Watson. But we're approaching the point in the, you know, in rookie drafts where I am fine pivoting out of all these picks. If somebody loved Christian Watson so much that they trade me a 23 or even 24 first rounder for the 207, I would immediately accept that deal without any counter, without hesitation. I'd press accept and go on about my day. It's almost to the point, Josh, where I would rather trade out of this part of the second and pick up a late third or a fourth and just take a dart throw on a random ass running back later than take any of these guys right here. I've got little interest in any of them being fantasy relevant. After Christian Watson, I'm just kind of done.
So for me, there's one more guy and then I'm done. Watson, okay. I think the draft capital is what gets me going more than anything else. I just don't love the profile. I don't like the small school guy who couldn't dominate as much as I wanted to. My fear is that he's MVS.
I think that's probably the one.
Do you think I think that's like his most likely outcome is that in best ball, you take him in the mid to late rounds and you're like, hey, he's going to give me 3 to 4 20-point weeks. But other than that, he's pretty much unstartable and he's actively hurting me in the other 12, 13 weeks of the year. So that's just my worry.
Okay. You're right. Will Fuller too high. MVS is a much better comparison, play style and outcome. Yes.
All right. This is the last guy I can even get out of bed and talk about without being unexcited completely. At the 209, I'll take Brian Robinson. Brian Robinson, I made a big thread on Twitter about how he's the next Ramondre Stevenson, and I meant that in the absolute best way. Ramondre Stevenson did nothing but significantly increase his dynasty value throughout his rookie year, solely because he was capable enough to handle high volume of touches when the other guy on his depth chart was hurt. We saw him have multiple 20 fantasy point weeks. I think Brian Robinson is capable of the same thing. Whatever backfield he goes to, he's going to have some type of role when he's not the guy. And I think when that starter inevitably gets injured, I think Brian Robinson is capable of a 20 fantasy point week. So he's probably going early round four. It looks like he and Rashad White are both the two guys that are going to go early to mid round four. And with Brian Robinson, his fifth year season at Alabama was incredible. Over 1,300 rushing yards, 35 catches, nearly 300 yards receiving. That is what I like to see. And if you look at the Lance Zierlein film grades, since I just pulled those up, He and Ramondre Stevenson were neck and neck with a touch of an edge, actually, to Brian Robinson. So I saw that and I was like, some film guy out there liked him a touch more than Ramondre. And Ramondre increased his dynasty value. One for one comparison. I like the senior year production, or the super senior production. Brian Robinson, 209. For me, this is when I am now officially done. I would trade that pick for a random or even a late 2023 second. But if I'm forced to pick it, Brian Robinson, 209.
All right, at 210, I'm going running back as well. I'm following you, and I'm staying in the SEC, and I'm taking the guy that has two ACL tears in his knee, but somehow ran a damn 4.3 40-yard dash at the combine. I'm taking Zamir White. He has stone hands. He will never be deployed as a pass-catching weapon at the NFL level. He is strictly a grinder, but he's good. He was a highly touted high school prospect. You know, I'm not as concerned about Georgia, and here's why. And I don't know if you heard this, but Kirby Smart, the head coach of Georgia, came out a couple of years ago and pretty much said his recruiting pitch to all high school running backs is, you will not receive the bulk of the carries here. My goal is to have you fresh when you enter the NFL. And he's done that. I mean, all of his running backs have gotten a shot. I mean, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, DeAndre Swift. Now you're looking at Zamir White about to get his shot, James Cook. That's just their pitch. In college, you know, there's only a handful of teams that just give one running back the ball, and Georgia has so many 4- and 5-star recruits, they just don't do that. So I'm not as concerned about his production. My philosophy, like, at this point, I think we're in gross land, but in, like, 3rd round, 4th round, like, all the profiles are going to be broken. There's something when you look at them, something's not going to be right. So I'm just looking at skill set. Does this guy have anything to where when he gets on the field, like, he can do something? And Zamir White is fast. He's explosive. He can do that, right? So I'm going to take Zamir White here. It's a running back, and they're easy to flip, man. I mean, it's so easy to trade running backs in Dynasty, especially ones that have a little bit of juice or get an opportunity. So I'm going Zamir White at 210. But like you said, I'd be fine trading this pick.
Yeah, I think he's a fine bet. Look, he's actually going to get probably similar draft capital to Rashad White and Brian Robinson. These are all the beginning of the round four guys where they no longer are in day two. But yeah, he seems like a very strong, pure runner who's kind of a weirdly freakish athlete that's still available at this part of the draft. Can't say anything bad about that pick. I'll take the tight end. We're going to go Trey McBride here at the 211. And with Trey McBride, he's going to go probably early in round two from what I've been seeing. Maybe he lasts a little bit longer. And I think with him, he's going to have some type of value insulation just because he has the draft capital. And people know at this point that tight ends start off slowly in Dynasty. And I don't love taking tight ends, but it's just hard to find someone with that type of draft capital at a position where there are so few contributors and where we did see him put up over 1,000 yards at, what was it, Colorado State. So it's not like it's the greatest competition, but hey, the guy was a real, like, a primary weapon in the receiving game there with over 1,000 receiving yards. So it showed that at least somewhere in some world, he was able to be a team's number one. And I think that the tantalizing landing spot would be the Buccaneers. If the Buccaneers take him and Gronk retires, which is still a possibility, as much as my dynasty and best ball shares that I've already been drafting would hate if Gronk retires, I think that is still a possibility. And they could just one-for-one swap him in with McBride, who I think is ready to be a pass catcher from day one. He's nothing flashy, nothing special, but I think he's capable of volume, and he'll get guaranteed round two draft capital.
Okay. So here I am, I'm here at the final pick, right?
Close us out. 212. Yeah, got some names on the board.
Yeah, we got some names on the board. I can go a little Calvin Austin, the diminutive wide receiver that people love for some reason, even though these guys never hit, like, ever at his size. Don't really want David Bell. Alec Pierce, God, man.
He's just like the poor man's Christian Watson.
Yeah, I just can't do it. I'm just going running back. I'm sticking to my running back guns, and I'm going Damian Pierce. I'll take Damian Pierce. He can catch the ball. Jordan Backus told me that his yards per route run at the running back position was really, really good, like ridiculously high for a running back who's actually being split out as a wide receiver, and I love to see that. Again, these later picks, profile is broken somewhere. I'm just looking at skill set, and he's got – I think he's one of those players where you'll hear me say a lot as a film guy, Larky. I think he's just built more for the NFL than he was for college. Florida was a clusterfuck from day one. Like, that was just a bad college scheme. That's why they got rid of everybody. So I think Damian Pierce is going to be a lot better in the NFL. What does that account to? Maybe he's Ramondre Stevenson type, to where, you know, he plays a couple of games and he's really usable and he boosts his value and you can trade him. But I like his game, so I'll take him here at the 212.
Yeah, he's someone that I would consider here. I think he's one of like three names where I think you can pick him towards the end of the second round. I think with Damian Pierce, I think his actual most likely outcome is the kind of player that we hate in fantasy. We're like, God damn it. Why is Damian Pierce getting so many snaps when other young running back that we love, it's like Gibson with McKissick. I think he could really wreck a backfield because got the yards per route run or targets per route run, very good. The thing that I noticed with him is he grades out incredibly well with pass blocking. And he's built like a damn bowling ball. He's like 5'10", 220. This is a short, stubby guy who's an unbelievable pass blocker, adequate receiver. And yeah, he'll probably have some value when the starter gets injured. But I think his most likely outcome is that he's just going to be the player that we love to hate in fantasy. We're like, man, Damian Pierce is keeping my random favorite running back away from fantasy superstardom. So not that I'm doing much better with my McBride pick, who's most likely going to be giving you 7.5 fantasy points a game. But this is why we're telling you trade out at the end of the second round. It's not very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You want to recap it?
Yes. I think I'm ready. I'll give you the first round if you want to give the second round.
Okay.
I'm going to go. All right. I think I have it memorized at this point. We still haven't annotated the first round, but I'm ready for it. Breece Hall, 101. Malik Willis, 102. Then we have Kenneth Walker, 103. Garrett Wilson, 104.
Nope.
Did I already mess this up?
You've already messed it up, Larky. Because remember,
Wilson was 104.
Wilson was 104. Walker was 105. I didn't take Walker to 105. 103.
Oh, my God. You took Corral. I'll let you take the first round.
I took Matt Corral at 103. Shit, I don't know it any better than you. All right, I got Matt Corral at 103. Garrett Wilson, 104. Kenny Walker, 105.
I sniped Drake London,
Drake London, 106. Treylon Burks went 107. No, Desmond Ritter, 107.
Jameson Williams, 108.
There it is. Treylon Burks, 109. Jameson Williams, 110. Isaiah Spiller.
Jameson Williams was 108.
108.
I took Pickett, 110.
There it is.
That was the pick I hated.
Treylon went 109. Pickett, 110. Isaiah Spiller, 111. And 112, damn it, was Chris Olave, right?
Yes.
All right, we got it, baby. That's why you tune into the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast. We are human. We struggle just like you. We are human beings that struggle and screw up and don't annotate the first round of a rookie mock. But y'all know who was there. Y'all listen. You've been listening for like an hour and a half. You knew what it was. Go ahead. I'll give you the easy round, Larky. Give us round two.
So round two, we actually took notes properly. You went with Sky Moore at the 201. I took Pickens, 202. You fired back with Dotson, 103. I went Rashad White, 204. Then you came back with... did we not put down who the 205 was?
You know. Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. We did not do the 205. Who was 205? Who the hell was 205? Who
I thought was you took James Cook at 205.
Was it 205 I took Cook? I put 207. Did we miss a pick? There's no way. There's no way. Yeah. Rashad White, 204. That was you.
Yeah, you had 205.
Yeah, 205 was James Cook.
You took James Cook 205. Dear which God, means that means I must have pick. Taken.
Oh, gosh. There's another pick.
Oh, I took Sam Howell 206. You took Christian Watson 207. That's what it is. You took Watson 207. 208, I came back with Brian Robinson. 209, you came back with
Zamir White.
Zamir White.
210 was Trey. 210 must have been Trey McBride. We missed a pick. You've got one more pick, Larky. There's one more pick in this mock. We have just gone through it, and there's another pick. So 210 was Trey McBride. Then 211 was Damian Pierce. And now you, sir, are on the clock for 212.
And this is why we recap. We got to give you 24 picks, not 23 picks.
That's right.
So I think the names that I would toy with here would be Alec Pierce, John Metchie, and Tyler Allgeier. Yeah. I'll take Tyler Allgeier. I'll just take the running back. We've talked about it before that the running backs, if you really hate the receivers, that's the dart throw to take, where at the very least, they'll have value when the player they're backing up gets injured. And it's always nice to stockpile running backs in Dynasty. You want to have like 8 to 10 of them on your roster. That way, if one of your starters gets injured, hopefully you have either your own or someone else's backup running back and you can slot him in. Allgeier out of BYU, he's a little slow, but he looks like he's a hard-nosed runner. He's got feature back size. He has all-around production, and he's probably going in the round 4 of the NFL draft. So Tyler Allgeier, welcome to the team at the 212.
And now we have completed the two-round 2022 first FTN Fantasy Football Super Flex Rookie Mock Draft that will look totally different next Tuesday when we revisit the landing spots and the draft capital. But Larky, this was a fun exercise, and I'm excited for Thursday, man.
Yeah, same. Just a reminder, everyone, the NFL live draft stream coming up Thursday and Friday for all of day one and day two. We will be starting early, so we'll shoot for 30 minutes. I think it's either 30 minutes or an hour before draft time. You can keep up on all the FTN Twitter accounts to figure out exactly when we're starting. It's either 30 minutes or an hour before the draft begins. We will be providing the content and getting you hyped up. We might even have a couple beers with the crew, so you can have a cold one with us or a warm one with us. Whatever you want, we're not going to judge. We're excited to see you there. And yeah, I'm excited to see what happens with the draft. I'm sure it's going to change a lot of stuff in terms of our landing spots and how we're valuing these players. So yeah, very excited for this. And I think one thing that you and I can definitely work on, like you said, somehow this hour show always seems to be 75 minutes to 90 minutes. So I think we have homework for ourselves of how do we give less analysis? Or maybe, you know what, this will be a 75-minute show. So who even knows? But it's been a pleasure, as it has been the last 3 weeks. Oh, I have nothing else to go out on than that.
Oh, you! I thought you were going to give us something great to go out on. Yeah. That's it. Show's over. Tune into the FTN Fantasy Football, to the FTN NFL Draft Stream. It'll be dope, man. It'll be good. Good people there. Good fun. Come hang out and appreciate the extra time we gave you for this one. Subscribe to the podcast. Tap in all the dope content creators that FTN has to offer. And we'll be back next week to talk fallout from the 2022 NFL Draft.